Welcome to the Weekend Must Watch on Intercut, the weekly show going through the movies, TV, and entertainment that people just can't cut away from. This week in movies, we have a new Sony movie, which means we're going to get memed to death because that's what happens every single time there's a new Sony movie that's out. There's also a new Bob Marley movie, so in case you haven't been up with what's been happening in music, this is still not really going to catch you up on everything, but for the most part, it's going to get you some new stuff if you didn't know about the man. But we have one of the best movies that maybe should have been nominated by France if they were willing to actually nominate good movies in the Taste of Things. If you were late to the rom-com stuff, we got two rom-coms with Players and Five Blind Dates that played over on streaming. And then we have the biggest movie of the week, the reason why we're gathered here today. And if there are any objections, please let me know. This is me, .. Now, the movie that I know Zach is most anticipating to talk about here on the show. As always, I'm your co-host, Arturo Zurita, and joining me to reboot the SSU, which I know Zach knows exactly what that means, it's Zachary Shevich.
Yeah, I'm always in favor of reboots and reimagining, so whatever it is, I'm on board.
How many names have we gotten for Spider-Man?
I don't know which of this week's movies I'm, like, most or least excited to talk about. This is a weird week in new releases.
A little bit, yeah.
And hopefully it's about to get a lot better with some filmmakers we like back with some films really soon.
I was like, who could possibly be coming in to fix all this mess, all of these reboots, these different original projects that are coming out in January and February? Leave it to the big guns. We got the Coen brothers coming back with, or a Coen brother coming back with
a movie. Coen brother.
We've got a Denis Villeneuve coming in with one of his movies. But before we get then, we do have a slew of movies to talk about this week that, again, vary from different things. But overall, how was your week in movies, Zach? Because I know we got a little bit of a cold front. You were more in the sports area of things this past week.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been entertaining myself in ways that are not really sitting and watching movies. I told you about all the cooking for my Oscars feast video this week. I got some videos and photos that will hopefully be up soon for that, but that was several days in the kitchen, which I don't know, it can be fun, but it is also a little bit exhausting and hard to pay
Zach
attention to movies.
Bear. Yeah, he's yelling corner to himself, corner.
Exactly, yeah, it's a little hard to like run my kitchen and also pay attention to foreign films, but you know, I found some gaps, so we got to see some stuff. I also I told you I went to that outdoor hockey game in New Jersey, mm-hmm. which was very cold. It's been cold here too. I don't know if
out of nowhere, dude.
Yeah, I'm excited for Austin. Chicago.
Yes, when you came over to Chicago, it was pretty bad. Wood was cracking. Yeah, there were bottles just being created in front of us.
And that weather, like, especially we both are dog owners. We got to take our dogs outside sometimes. That could just be really exhausting. Sometimes it's hard to find that extra energy to see stuff outside of seeing Madame Web.
And especially after you go out to see Madame Web, you start questioning the line of work that you're in. But let's begin. Why not? With the one and only Madame Web, the newest movie to come out of Sony, which again is a part of the SSU, not to be confused with, I don't know, they're going to change it by the next one. When Sony started this, obviously it was the old Spider-Man in Tobey Maguire, right? That's what started it all. There wasn't really all these big franchises. You kind of had Spider-Man going, you had the X-Men going. Then they rebooted it with Andrew Garfield. They didn't even tell Andrew Garfield he was gone. Then they got Tom Holland because they got that deal with the MCU. We're not going to get into all the deals with the MCU, but I'm sure, Zach, as someone who's not the biggest of comic book fans, you kind of get that they're sharing it, right? I don't know if there's anything else that a non-comic book fan needs to know about that whole ordeal.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's basically like they're doing everything they can to exploit the vast Spider-Man universe of characters and offshoots and stuff, because that's all they have access to. But in Sony's favor, it happens to be probably the most famous or iconic of these superhero characters, right? At least when it comes to big screen adaptations. You know, obviously DC's got their Superman and Batman, but like Spider-Man is our most reliable superhero film franchise right now. And
easily.
I see the business decisions behind wanting to see all you can get out of it. And especially when a film like Venom hits, I see leaning further into that. I get where the decision to make a movie like this comes from. That's about all I get about Madame Web.
bro, I don't get half the stuff they do here. If they were like Madam Web with every possible scenario on how to play something, they somehow choose the worst every single time.
Every single
time. Like, you're right. Spider-Man is the biggest of heroes. When Marvel was at its peak, what happened in Civil War? Who did they bring in and everybody paid attention to, right? When Infinity War happened, right before Endgame, who was the biggest death that died in like the biggest superhero arms? It's Spider-Man. They just won not too long ago and are up this year for an Academy Award for Best Animated Feature with a Spider-Man. What the heck is a Madam Web? I have never seen a studio struggle so much in wanting to, like, honestly just whore out Spider-Man, but they can't even say his name in the movie.
Right.
What type of movie baits fans to come in and goes, this is Peter Parker's mom, but she can't say Peter Parker? What goofiness are we working with here? I'm going to be straight up honest with you. I did not like Morbius. As you know, I reviewed Morbius so bad, Sony has not allowed LME to go back to any Sony screenings in general, not even at festivals, right? We did not get an invite to Madam Web. But damn, I don't like Morbius, and I would keep that review the exact same way. I had such a blast in Madam Web because I truly think it's so bad it's good, dude. I don't know how you felt about it, if you felt agony like a lot of other people did.
Yeah.
But she is in a weird movie. These girls think that they're in the MCU. They got my boy Raheem, who is an incredible actor, man.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've seen some of his movies because people have been downplaying this man because they ADR'd him to death.
Yeah.
He is a classically trained actor, bro. He was in Napoleon. He is in one of my favorite movies, A Prophet. I think this is a legendary
movie. Shout out to A
Prophet. People think he can't act because every single line that he says, he's dubbing over, bro. It's like he recorded it for his language in French.
Yeah.
And came in and dubbed it.
It's crazy.
Atrocity. But it's so bad, it's good.
I'm glad you had fun with it. Maybe if I subjected myself to the depths of Morbius, I would also come through the other
side. You never saw Morbius?
I skipped it entirely. I could not put myself through Vampire Jared.
That's how you know when you have great coffee, when you've tasted the worst of the beans. Then you know when to truly...
Well, so now I feel like I've tasted the worst of the beans because, like, I just don't know what we're doing here. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me. It is so half-hearted, so halfway in. And that's like everything from the way it's written with the like blatant, really lazy exposition moments, the way it's acted where Dakota Johnson never really feels like any sort of urgency in her dialogue. Like,
she's saying the accents are in the wrong place. Like, it should be on like, what are you doing? But it's on, what are you doing? Why is it on the last word?
It's like, it feels so just like, I guess we're making a movie now.
Right?
It doesn't feel like anybody had like any real interest in trying to make a good version of it, just a version of it. They just wanted to get to the finish line of this movie. And I'm like, I was so sort of struck existentially by like the idea of how bad this movie could be, the idea of how it seems like inevitable that we're just going to continue getting these like little slivers of IP exploitation in the means of like expanding this greater Spider-Verse. I did something I don't do often. I bought a ticket to a different movie in order to not see this one.
What'd you buy it to?
I helped boost the Bob Marley One Love box office
better.
This weekend.
That explains why it came at number one. I was about to say, you go in there and you're giving it to like Aquaman 2.
Yeah. And I just did not want to be somebody who paid for Madam Web this weekend.
I don't think it matters, bro. These guys are never going to get smart with it.
I don't think so either.
Did you see the director? The director has worked on a lot of TV, and I saw a lot of people were surprised to find out that she had directed one of the better episodes of Succession, which was really one of the only things in her big breakdown that stood out to me, right?
Yeah, it's top five episode for me.
I know you love it. It's the one where they take your boy to his bachelor party.
Yeah. The episode's called Prague with the underground party. It's so funny.
You would think that someone who directed that would have more self-awareness than what's happening here, which is why I have to say it's some sort of studio meddling, bro. I don't know if you heard the theories to this, and this is going to be slight spoilers, but I know nobody really cares, right? There are elements to this movie that are just bad filmmaking. Forget the fan service. There are moments in here where girls get kidnapped, and an hour after getting kidnapped, there are people reading about it in a newspaper. Now, Zach, you've been around in 03.
Yeah.
Newspapers didn't work that way. Like, there's just fundamental things that have nothing to do with comics. that are just not being done here properly. Then you have the comic stuff, and it is just like dumb to a degree that it makes you wonder, how can a character who can see the future acknowledge that her friends around her are going to have a really bad future and she's not going to do anything about it? She's almost like making jokes on it. And this is where I wonder how much of this was supposed to be a different story. Do you get a competent director and you get an actress who came in to do something, and then it ends up being a completely different project after it all failed? There was rumors that this is supposed to be their connection to one of the Spider-Mans, right? It could be Toby, it could be Andrew, it could be whatever else. I'm of the belief that it was supposed to be Tom Holland because of the year. If he's a baby, he's exactly the age he needs to be for the MCU.
The lineage sort of lines up there.
Right? They show you every single character, his parents. Have we seen him in the MCU? No. Have we seen the uncle? No. Except what's the one person we've seen? The aunt. And it's the one character they go, I'm dating somebody, but I can't say her name. Bro, this is so corny. I don't get it, but I would recommend when this comes out, like Zach said, rent a different movie and somehow get this one out of the red box. You will have a blast with friends drinking. Just play a bingo game. I'm sure a bingo card will come out on this. I thought it was such a bad movie that I had a great time with it, and I would recommend it as a beautiful stream it for those who are curious about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I've been seeing a lot of empty, like, looking at the AMC A-List app, and you sometimes can see how many seats are occupied, right? Yeah. There's a lot of screenings that were completely open on Saturday and Sunday, and then Monday, when I went, they was a lot more competition for seats. It feels like it's almost building into something that's becoming more of a, like, you have to see it because people think it's so funny and bad than people rushing out opening weekend. Because it didn't end up taking the number one spot at the box office this weekend, to my surprise. Yeah.
That's crazy to me. And it makes me compare it to, like you were saying, you haven't seen Morbius, but I think you should do your homework and do so. Because I want you to see the difference between the two. I think that when people memed Morbius, it was just dunking on it because it was bad. There was nothing good on it. When Sony tried to make it into a meme and re-released it, what happened? The worst re-release in history. Mm-hmm. You're right. This may be the one that people are actually returning, I think, because they like her more. I don't think people are as annoyed with her as a lead actress as they are with Jared Leto during that period in time. Mm-hmm. I think this actually has funnier scenes that are just, like, so dumb. So I'm curious how they play that. If it does have legs throughout the week.
I also think she has an audience of fans who kind of are into that type of reaction, right? Like, I don't think that there's a bunch of people who want to meme Jared Leto and, like, that make that their identity. But there are people who, like, live and breathe for Dakota Johnson's awkward press reactions. And you can get a lot of that energy from this movie.
She has a bunch of lines in there, right? Where it's like she's just setting it up for the in and out. So, look, I don't think it's the worst. I know Zach is not happy with Sony or whatever the next one's going to be.
I'd rather see Argyle again.
So you're
I had a better time at Argyle.
Stop. That's because you got a shirt out of Argyle. If you came out with a Madame Web shirt, maybe it'd be a little bit higher for you. So you're not excited for Kraken?
Craven.
Craven. I don't even know it.
Yeah.
I guess I'm not even excited.
Right? Craven. I feel like that at least seems a little bit more like they're genuinely doing the movie. It doesn't seem as half-hearted, as like embarrassed by its own existence as this one does. But maybe I'm going to be wrong. I mean, I haven't enjoyed really any of these Sony riffs on Spider-Man. I'm not a fan of the Venom movies either.
I like the Venom movies a little bit more than what they've been doing with all this garbage.
I mean, better than this for sure. But I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely not excited for Kraven, but I'm not dreading it the way that I think I was kind of dreading this one.
Your thoughts on what they're going to be doing with Spider-Man if that deal with Disney ends up going kaput? Will they be able to handle Spider-Man on their own? It's like you have to call child services. You're calling character services on this company who doesn't know what to do with their character.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is that, like, enough people care about the Tom Holland version of Spider-Man at this point that it doesn't necessarily need that interconnectedness with the greater MCU stuff.
Agreed.
It just might feel strange and different. But, you know, they haven't shown a real, like, patience at finding the right match of, like, filmmaker to IP. And that's the thing that would, I think, worry me the most about what they do with the future of Spider-Man.
That's a great point. Shout out our boy Chase. He had made a great video about Star Wars that had that exact same outlook, which was they're not hiring people to make real movies to get a Dark Knight trilogy, to get the Dune movies that we're seeing, big IP stuff. They're not even giving you what Marvel used to at the beginning, right, which was a Raimi trilogy until it got sour. What was supposed to be the first Iron Man with an actual vision from, what's our boy, Swingers?
Jon Favreau.
Before Favreau became, you know, Disney's Favreau. But nonetheless, I agree with you. Having an actual voice behind it would make it a lot better. And I'm worried that they're just not going to do that. I don't think Spider-Man's going to go back to Disney. You heard Feige's war. He's worn thin. No, I feel like we're getting less Marvel movies, but he's just admitting my boy Jimmy Gunn left and he was really doing all the work.
He's letting the stress show and maybe it's getting to him.
Please add your prayers for Spider-Man tonight at baby Peter Parker. Hopefully he has a future, because right now it's not looking the strongest. But Madam Web is out in theaters at the number 2 spot. So if you were curious, catch it right now on a $5 Tuesday, because I think that's the better time to catch it. Or just wait till it's where? It's Sony. It won't even be on Disney Plus. It'll
Netflix? They still have a Netflix deal? I feel like they do.
I heard surprise news that Sony was not going to be producing all of the physical discs for Disney.
Oh.
So maybe Madam Web was the sacrifice we needed to get physical media back. So thank you, Madam Web. I knew you were going to see all Visions, and we appreciate you for that. Moving on to the movie that did beat Madam Web. Who would have thought that an actual cinematic superhero movie would get beat by the one and only Bob Marley? This is the new movie that is produced by his son through and through. His son has been parading this all over the place from the Grammys. I don't know when you saw it, but when I saw it, he came out at the beginning and he said he was there every day on set.
Yeah, I got the whole, that's the thing, you know, you normally get the intro from the director or the lead actor, right? Nope, they got a welcome to the movies from Ziggy Marley, which...
Himself.
It takes the whole, like, family-approved biopic to a whole new level.
Almost to a level where they unashamedly are like, we're going to do scenes where this isn't even for y'all. Like, that's my dad staring at actor me. Look, I thought it was a decent biopic. This is one of those where I think you're really getting a slice of life. You don't get to see how he started up. You get some inklings of it in flashbacks, but it's really this moment in time where he's going through the thick of it, right when he's about to rise to fame, but also when his country is like at the brink of a civil war because of the split that they've been doing from the UK.
Yeah.
I thought the performances were strong. I thought the way that they allowed you to vibe with the music was good, because there will be these tense scenes and then they'll be like, we're going to do a jam session. They do the jam session. When they perform a concert, they perform the concert. Mm-hmm. I think it's worthy of its Dolby price if you're going in there for the music. I think it's worthy of the acting performances. Part of me still feels, though, like this is a really great movie length episode of his story, and I kind of wanted more. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I just wanted a little bit more.
Yeah, I feel somewhat similarly to you, because as far as music biopics go, it's obviously a very tired genre, but this movie does some things that I think we normally like. It doesn't try to do the whole, like, birth to death, you know, cradle to grave kind of style biopic where you only get, like, flash glimpses of these moments in an interesting person's life. And instead, as you mentioned, it's just focusing on the time basically shortly before he leaves Jamaica and for the UK until he finally returns to Jamaica amidst all that civil unrest and performs those peace concerts. So, like, giving you kind of that hyper-focused look at a section of his life allows you to dive deeper into certain ideas and certain moments and how songs were developed. And it provides an opportunity to, you know, actually get a deeper understanding of Bob Marley. I just don't know if I really got that from this film. I don't know if I took away as much as I would have liked to, and I'm not sure where exactly it lies, because, you know, as we've mentioned in the past, this film comes directed by a filmmaker we like in Reynaldo Marcus Green, who makes some good movies, some okay movies, but some really good movies, and also has this pretty solid, at bordering on incredible, lead performance from Kingsley Benadire, where he's doing some of his own singing, some of his own guitar playing and stuff, just really does a great job of embodying the character. Ultimately, I wonder if it is just the script not having enough movement in its character, right? I feel like the characters are all sort of stuck in a place for a majority of this movie. And there's not as much like room to see different sides of them. And it left me wanting a deeper understanding. And maybe it is because it is such a small slice of the life that we don't get it. But, you know, it did come up a little bit short for me.
Because I'm trying to wonder, like, what would I add to it? And I'm like, at this point, I'm making it a 3-hour movie. I'm making it a miniseries at that point. So I go back to my age-old rule of that. I think it was a smart approach that he did because it feels like you're hanging out with him. And it does feel, with his performance, like you got to see him backstage for a little bit.
Yeah.
But it does not feel like what that biopic inside his life is supposed to be, where you understand something. There will be moments where, again, really great performance, but he'll snap. And you'll be like, what did that? We've been here for like an hour and change, right?
Yeah.
There'll be a moment where you're like, okay, I can tell we've seen enough. There's infidelity. But like, we didn't fully see it. We just saw an actress who looked familiar. And I was like, you're too big to be here. Oh, I guess that's what you're supposed to represent. And I wanted those pockets to be explored more.
Yeah.
And again, the movie does choose when to pause. You could have maybe filled it more if you cut out one of the songs to be half the length. But I didn't want it to be, because that's where he excelled the most. I'm going to go through the supporting cast and then really shout him out. Starting with some of the smaller ones over here, you had... Did you get the surprise one?
Michael Gandolfini?
It took me a minute. I'm like, who is this man? Who is this man speaking in this room? It feels like a therapy session. And they got Gandolfini Jr. over here as like a studio exec who was like pushing against what the artwork should be. I thought he did a great job.
I liked him a lot.
Seeing him. I like seeing a new side of him. It was different than Licorice Pizza, which I enjoyed. But going through some of the other ones, he has a lot of people around him. And one of the guys who I recognized immediately is this dude, Tosin Cole. British actor, deep British accent. Yet I said in House Party, which isn't a great movie, I thought his American accent was good, but he can't freestyle outside of it. Same thing here. An incredible accent. You never see him freestyling outside of it. And that's why our lead is so good. There are moments where it doesn't feel like he's going on script, but they'll be like rehearsing and he'll like mess up. And I'm like, did he mess up? But he messed up in character as Bob Marley. And it gives you that truth. It allows you to be able to get this scene where the actor has fully embodied the character. And with accent work, with a biopic especially, that's sometimes the hardest thing to do. But that's where I'm like, I'm willing to throw away all those extra scenes that I want to get to know him deeper, because that's almost when you get to know him the truest. He does this dance that they intercut later on to the real Bob Marley. And it's just that freaking joy that this artist had that I think has resonated to today and why it ended up being number one at the box office. I really like how they captured the music, and I can't complain about that. Lashana Lynch, dude.
Woo! Also, another really solid performance. Yeah.
Look, I'm going to keep it a buck, bro. I know that a lot of people are not going to understand the accents that are happening here, and y'all going to need captions. But even if you don't understand a word, you can feel everything this woman says, dude. Mm-hmm. What an incredible performance. Another person who has just weaved in accent work through all these movies that you see here. And there's one specific scene, that Paris scene between the two of them.
Yeah, on the street.
And that's where I wanted more, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's everything, but it's just like, you two were just giving it all, and I could see more of you two embodying these two people's lives, because she wasn't just someone who wrote with him. She toured with him. And that intro beginning that you get with her from the car, Alina took out her phone. She searched it up immediately when they said on the radio, or the doctor had said something. We had to search up that fact about her. It's an insane stat to know. There's some things that I did not know about him, especially how his story went, that I found to be interesting. So I do think that at the end of it, while it isn't the grand biopic, it is definitely a part of the media that has covered this man that will continue to add to his legacy. So I still think it's worth catching in theaters, especially at that Dolby setting, if you can, for the music, even if it is more of a junior price. I wanted to go full combo, but I'm gonna go more of a matinee for this. But Bob Marley, one love, still a thumbs up for me.
Yeah, I think I'm going 3 stars on it, because it's I think it's good enough to see.
Give him the half.
I don't know, man.
For his performance.
Maybe.
Hey, I got you one. When they would record. And they all had those cannolis. Like, they did not have joints, bro. They had cannolis that were, like, shipped in. And that, like, 10 minutes. That's all they're doing is just chilling and vibing.
I dug the peace pipe. I definitely dug the peace pipe, for sure. But
they were chill, bro. I liked it.
You, as great as a lot of those performances were, they sometimes it was a little on the nose in terms of song selection. You know, he gets into a fight with Lashana Lynch, and it's No Woman, No Cry. It's like, oh, we're gonna come up with a new sound, and it's we're jamming. You know, we're jamming in the studio, and I don't know.
All right, Zach left here, so I hope he gets to hear this one when he comes back. But Zach reminded me of a really bad one. There's a point early on in the movie. I think he's coming back in over here. Zach, you had mentioned the ones you were going through. I got another one for you. I was jamming too hard on that. Yeah, I hate that you're making me agree with you. You're not coming in yet. But all right, I got you. There was one early on when his kid's worrying.
Yeah, no worry, no cry, right?
Don't worry.
Yeah.
About a thing.
Yeah, don't worry about things.
Oh, hey, I didn't say it was 5 stars, right? But I think I'd set it at a 3.5.
Yeah.
A decent little movie that's out there. Hey, I'm excited to see what Kingsley has next. It's like he's there, but I still want him to do more. He has a Marvel series.
He's one of those
lead here.
Mm-hmm. He's one of those guys who's like, Lashana Lynch is honestly a little bit like this too. They're both like on the verge.
007, yes.
At some point, they will get the role that makes them household names, but they've put in the reps, right? Like, yes, they've built the muscle.
Yeah, they're like fully trained actors. They're the best that we have right now. That's why I like seeing him in this movie. Shout out Ronaldo, who you had mentioned earlier. I know he's done some big ones, but We Own the City, Monsters and Men, those two alone are the reason why I'm always going to support whatever this man's doing in theaters. So, mm-hmm. Bob Marley,
Were you surprised at all by the performance of the film, its box office, and beating out Madame Web?
Against Madame Web, kind of, bro. It's MCU.
Yeah.
Or it's still Marvel.
It is, but honestly...
Can you zoom in on that?
Yeah. So I wonder if it's as simple as more people know who Bob Marley is than Madame Web. Yeah, it made almost double what Madame Web made over the weekend, at least domestically.
Bro, I can't be mad at that.
Yeah.
I can't be mad at that. Okay, good for
but
it.
But Bob Marley's also like a international superstar. He's on, you know, that's more college dorm room walls than almost anybody.
That's what the movie's boasting. And look at that. That's a victory lap right there, what the movie was saying. So honestly,
yeah,
that makes the movie a little better. Zach, give it that extra half.
Fine. I haven't logged in on Letterboxd yet.
That's pretty crazy, though. Double? Hey, shout out for that. So that's Madame Web. That's Bob Marley, One Love. We move on to a movie that I actually would recommend highly, highly, highly. So much so that I agree with Zach, who had told me, hey, France isn't picking this. Or France picked this over the movie everybody loves. A movie called Anatomy of a Fall. That got how many Oscar nominations, even though it was against it?
5? Something like
Zach
that?
Zach has been adamant. He's been saying, yo, France went a different way. But while everyone's rooting for this other movie, I think The Taste of Things may be the movie that people need to pay attention to. And look, I liked that other movie a little bit more than Zach, which was Anatomy of a Fall, a thriller where you're trying to wonder, is this woman guilty? Is she not guilty? It got a lot of Oscar nominations, so that's definitely people telling you that they see a lot in it. How can a cooking movie surpass that, Zach? No, I'm asking you, how did a cooking movie surpass that, Zach? The Taste of Things is the best movie out in theaters right now.
It is such a delight. It is so beautiful, so lovely. Just like, you know, the original title of this in French was pot-au-feu, which is French for beef stew. This is a beef stew-ass movie. It feels like taking like a nice big spoon of warm soup where it like goes down your esophagus and warms your whole chest. I loved this movie.
It's a full course meal. There's a section in here when someone goes to try a meal of another person who's very high class. Mm-hmm. He's just disgusted at the menu. Before even trying it, he goes, all of this clash. It's like he's trying a flight of beers and he's starting with the dark ones before the light ones. You don't do it that way, right? Beer before liquor, never sicker. This is paced so beautifully. And you know, you and I are people who really like these metaphors to food, right? Mm-hmm. What you're consuming with your eyes is almost as simple as what you're consuming. You are what you eat. You are what you see, almost, right?
Mm-hmm.
The way this movie is paced is like that full course meal. It knows exactly when to give you a spicy moment, more of a sensual moment, more of a sweet moment. There are cuts in this movie. I guess let me bring it back for those of you who may not know. This is France's submission. They chose not to do Anatomy of a Fall, which is I like it. I think I like it more than Zach. I am not bashing that movie.
No, and Anatomy of a Fall is good. I just
it's really good.
This is the movie that stuck with me far more than Anatomy of a Fall has. This was my Valentine's Day watch this year.
A fantastic Valentine's Day watch. Right? This is a, I think I saw it on Valentine's Day too. This was beautiful. This is a movie about, I want to say a master chef, really the, a really rich guy. He's more than just like
the,
a chef.
The Napoleon of gastronomy, they call
damn
him.
Damn near, right? And he is creating all of these different foods and menus. And he specifically has a partner who's been his co-chef for the longest time. Mm-hmm. And that is really the movie. You are seeing them prepare dishes. You are seeing them try other people's dishes. And you are seeing them maybe or maybe not become a pair themselves. Mm-hmm. I tried telling the good gospel of Juliette Binoche to Alina because she didn't know. And I'm like, you know those French movies that we watch at film festivals where you're like, wow, Lea Seydoux is a really good actor. I like hanging out with her. This that woman right there.
Yeah.
She wants the Lea can soar in Dune, right? I'm like, bro, there were lines that this woman was saying. There was moments that this woman was doing things without even saying anything. She whipped up this cream, just a lick of the cream. Alina was like, she just flexed so hard right there. Did you see the consistency of the cream? What movie makes you look up and go, in real time, they just whipped that correctly? Baked Alaskas. Everything up on screen. The vegan person who reviewed this on Letterboxd just made me more excited.
Right?
All you were doing was just naming the
whetting
cast.
Whetting my appetite.
It is great. It's patient. It's peaceful. But then it knocks you with these transitions. There is a transition dealing with a menu that cuts to a shot of a character.
Mm-hmm.
That is top three transitions of the year. I don't care.
Yeah.
It is impeccable. I rewatched it immediately to see the setup to that scene. I'm like, it is a movie even worth rewatching for those subtle moments when you really see how these characters cared for each other. I love it, bro. There's so much in this movie that I feel isn't a spoiler to tell you about the young apprentice that they have, who they tell you cannot be the best of the best until you eat a food that makes you cry. And Zach, I want to talk about I want to talk about that character and what happens in the second half for her. There's so much beauty. There's so much love in this. And it truly is. You can maybe never cook in your life, but whatever craft you do, you will admire the way they approach it here.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people describe this as an action movie, which I think is because there's so much like intricate camera work, and they're able to capture all of this movement with like such perfect timing, and it's really beautifully assembled. But to me, it's not so much an action movie as it is like a process movie, right? You are seeing the meticulous detail that goes into all this like fine preparation of this high class cuisine. It's you know, it's got similar moments to the sequences that we love in The Bear, where there's the food preparation, but it goes so much further and beyond it, because it's kind of like this, you know, these like extremely opulent, extravagant dishes. Also, this is a period piece that takes place, I believe, in the late 19th century. So like you're seeing these sort of like older techniques and these more primitive technologies and primitive kitchens and how more labor intensive a lot of this was. But it's in that labor you also see the, you know, the excellence and the mastery and just how in tune all of these people are, not just in the kitchen, but in the way that this is all captured on film. And it's just creates this like really captivating, hypnotizing kind of beauty that I think you can't help but be won over. It's really like the amazing smell emanating from the kitchen that just like lures you to the next meal. It just pulls you in and then is so delicious and savory. I love this movie so much. I only grew in my estimation on the rewatch.
I can see that for sure.
Yeah, you mentioned Juliette Binoche. I do also want to shout out Benoît Magimel, who plays Dodin in the film. Do you know that they were a married couple? They have a daughter together, but they've been separated for about 20 years.
Bro, I need you to tell me this, because Piano Teacher is my watch list movie for sure. I know people could yell at me. They're both in it. Then I'm looking at this man, and just as an aside, I had to search up what he looked like before to what he looked like then. It's a period piece, I'm just saying. But the man is really good, bro. Tell me more about this. That he is in Passive Fiction.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I mean, tell me more.
Another legendary French actor. They were married. So, and I think, like, you know, it's one of those things that, like, it's not necessarily part of the story, but I think it adds so much because they're...
No, you're adding a lot there, knowing what they do.
Yeah, because there is this, like, dude, this deep kind of, like, almost subconscious love that these characters have for each other.
But they're putting their craft first, yes, and they want the craft to be the first thing that's focused on, even though they are doing their craft together. Hey, yo, what?
Yeah, it kind of, like, explodes the movie a little bit and makes it even that much more amazing. I don't know, man.
Make me spoil some stuff here. I'm gonna say there's that line at the beginning where they tell her, "Why don't you join us?" And she's like, "I am joining you. The hours I spend in the kitchen, I'm speaking through you through the food."
Mm-hmm.
I'm just gonna say, Zach, think of the ending. Zach, now that you're telling me that they're real actors, how much of that is in this work? Yeah. I may not talk to you right now, but I'm filming this movie. You will see me live on forever in this product.
Dude,
I was comparing the difference between the craft of food and movies. Mm-hmm. You and I love this, obviously, and we put so much attention to video because it will live on forever. But to put that much, you just did how many meals for your Oscar prep? To put the same amount of effort, but for something that won't live on, maybe as a picture, but you eat it and it's done. It's like making a movie that will be consumed for one person, and that's it. The love and labor that goes into this craft.
Yeah, this really ethereal experience that it's so like the ephemeral. It's there and it's gone, right? Like it's there's so much poetry in that too.
Yes.
I mean,
fantastic,
incredible movie. As you mentioned, just incredible, incredible lines in this film. Like, I don't know if it's just like the lines are spoken that clearly or they have like an incredible translator, but there's so many pieces of dialogue that are burned in my brain. I love marriage is a meal where dessert is served before dinner.
Bruh. That one was fantastic. That one was really good. Let me see if I can pull up another one over here. But I'll go off of some of the shots like you were saying. It's like they're filming an episode of Overcooked, which is why when they were saying it's like an action movie, it's like, well, yeah, they've prepped it. I get Maestro. He trained so much to do it, right? But there really is a craft in stuff like this where we had seen a movie at Sundance where he painted and he said he studied the director who was a painter. And I'm like, okay, because someone's going to judge that stroke. Someone's going to judge the whipping. Someone's going to judge how you're pouring things. And I'm like, that's like so much effort to capture perfectly so that it looks the way it does right there cinematically for this movie. Yeah. What's that 3-hour Michelin star one?
Oh, the Wiseman movie. It's like Menu à Plater. I wish I spoke French so I could properly pronounce it.
That's them capturing actual people. But like this is like you were saying, like the bear where you have to, you have to train to look authentic, but then also a little bit more like an actor. Like, you have to get it down right, and you're seeing the meals prepared in front of you. Yeah, I can't wait to run it back. I should have seen this on the big screen. It's one of those where you're lucky enough to get a screener to review it, but, like, I would have seen this on the big screen, and I highly recommend it. Big combo price for me.
That is a thing that, like, because we got a screener, but I was lucky enough to have a chance to see it on the big screen. Please try to, if you can, if it's playing in your city, because I think there is so much beauty in how these images are assembled, and particularly like all of the food prep is so like intricate, and just to get to see it big, not have to like squint to focus on the details, I think is massive.
Mm-hmm.
And Devesh in the live stream, great advice for all of us. Just eat beforehand. I beg you. Yeah. You do not want to go into that movie with an empty stomach. It will be a tough 2.5 hours.
Go to a theater that's got a restaurant next door or down below so that it rises up to you. That's what you need.
Right. Although that's the thing is that most of these theaters that serve food, it's like chicken fingers or something.
And I was
I don't know if I could.
Can you imagine? I was saying go to a theater that's got a good restaurant outside, maybe down below.
There you go.
Perfect, something like that.
Perfect.
Hey, you know what? Just sneak it in yourself, right?
Yeah.
Just go in there, especially if you're somewhere else. But
fantastic
movie. Really good. Check it out if you have the chance, the Taste of Things. It is playing out in theaters right now. Devesh had also mentioned that technically Io Capitano, another one we're sitting on a link for, did snatch its spot for international category. I keep forgetting what were the five that got nominated, but what a travesty.
I mean, this is clearly one of the best international films of the year, right? Clearly.
And then this being France's pick and not the other one, and the other one gets everything, and this couldn't get the one thing it submitted
for. I don't understand it. I mean, I think Anatomy of Fall is really good. I'm not trying to disparage that film. I think this is something that's pretty special. Taste of Things.
It's a very good movie, so keep this one on your radar for the future when you get a chance to watch it. It is very, very good. We move on with a double feature of rom-coms that we have here. I think you got the chance to see the first one because it was the bigger of the two. Over on Netflix, it is called Players.
Yeah, it's this. It did this thing where I don't think we even mentioned Players in our coming attractions last week on Weekend Must Watch, but sometimes Netflix will just drop a movie and it'll end up in the top 10 and it's like, oh shit, we gotta rearrange our schedules and find time to watch this one.
You know, I had it on there. I just didn't care, bro. I swear this movie came out last year with her, and it came out the year before with her, and it came out the year before with her. My favorite version of hers.
Maybe it's just I didn't care.
Is the fact that she already did it better in the Netflix version that was called, damn, they even got it way below. Dear Lord. Well, by the time I find it.
Oh, it's that third one there.
Oh, it's the third one. There you go. All right, it's higher.
Someone Great.
As it should be. I like Someone Great.
I do too.
All of the rest have been derivative from that. That's how I feel. I don't even mean it as a diss. It's just you did the one that already has Great in the title, and everything else has just been a follow-up. Like, I'm not even, like, a lot of these are just Netflix throwaways. Mm-hmm. They really are. Miss Bala went to theaters, then they try to revive it. No, still couldn't find the girl in that. Awake, that came out on Netflix, did not like that. She tried to revive Spy Kids. I wanted to move on maybe from Netflix, so that's probably my stance for this. I didn't think this was bad, and that's the biggest thing of them all. Like, I don't think it's a terrible rom-com.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very by the numbers for a movie that's trying to say that they're not by the numbers. They're doing the whole press tour going, oh, we kind of did a spin on the rom-com. I'm like, baby, everyone's doing a spin on the rom-com.
Yeah.
And yours being a wingman is not really different. Let me guess. One of you is going to get a play back on them. Like, it's so obvious.
Yeah. And it's
but it's
like,
a decent cast.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's the thing. It's got a pretty decent cast of charming actors. I like Gina Rodriguez in this mode, but it is, as you mentioned, just like, it feels very much like a lot of stuff she's done before. To me, this lands somewhere in the median place between like a movie like Hitch and that sitcom Happy Endings. Maybe it's the Marlon Wayans, or sorry, the Damon Wayans Jr. of it all. But, you know, it's got some similarities to Hitch in that Hitch is a movie about this guy who does sort of like sets people up and tries to sort of trick people into dates for his clients. And this is a film where the characters run these plays, as they call them, to sort of manipulate people into relationships or situationships or whatever it is. But, you know, ultimately, they try to emphasize this aspect of the story, and then it just is not a huge part of it. Like, with Hitch, that part of the story is a huge part of the third act of that film, and that character's downfall.
Everything, yeah.
Yeah. That's a good movie. This is just sort of, like, a cute little thing they do while they, like, have very boring, normal kind of romantic comedy interactions, and it just doesn't – feel as, like, put together, as cohesive, as – as much of like a fluid idea. And it's more just like, here's some things we can try and maybe there'll be spurts of humor. I like that this film has these moments of like extremely casual, sexually vulgar jokes. Like, they talk about,
they did have that. I will give it that.
Like, the slip and slide moment was like, that's kind of funny, but like,
yeah,
it's, you know, a line of dialogue here and there is not enough to sell you on a whole romantic comedy.
And it feels like that's the afterthought that these actors are able to bring with it. Because someone who's making those jokes that are that vulgar, there's no way you stayed that boring and vanilla with the premise. Mm-hmm. So that's where it's like, I think it could have been a little bit better. I think it suffices for what it needs to be on Netflix. I don't know what you thought about your girl getting another role over here. I think this would be even bigger for our YouTube rising stars in Koshi.
Yeah,
playing
Eliza Koshy
herself again, which I want to see her break out of that. And there's elements in the plays where you can kind of see it, but she's still playing Eliza Koshy.
Yeah, and it honestly feels very derivative of, like, Awkwafina-style humor, too. I don't know. It just doesn't really, like, it doesn't jive with the rest of the movie as much. Like, there's a moment where they ask her to kind of, like, be a distraction, and it's unlike anything else that happens in the movie.
But they needed to, like, kind of spotlight her. I'm forgetting what the other guy's name is, but okay, it's not this dude. But the other friend that they have in the back, the tiny one? He was in, this is the guy from Lucifer, bro. It took me forever to realize. Why does he look like Satan? There's no way. Is it Joe Courtney? Oh, bro, I kept reading it like Jai Courtney. This dude, Joe Courtney, he was in the Kissing Booth. So it's almost like, all right, Netflix, you got another one for me? Cool, we'll put you in here. They don't feel like
Netflix
friends.
Netflix opened
feel
up
like,
the Rolodex.
We've seen Netflix do that before. They will start. I mean, they do it with the reality shows. Let's combine them all. And now we got a new reality show. All right, let's combine a bunch of people. Now we got a new original series of some sort. And yeah, it's kind of what it feels like. They need a new rom-com right in time for Valentine's Day. They got one. It's fine for what it is. Do you like the sports metaphors in there?
That's another thing. It was like classic. This person knows what she's talking about because she's going to reference an obscure sports thing, but it never actually feels like they know what they're talking about. Like, yeah. I don't for a second think that Gina Rodriguez can tell you about Bobby Hull.
Maybe. If she read the script earlier. Another one that did come out was Five Blind Dates. This is more dealing on the culture of like Asian tea and more so like how much this American girl knows of her traditions and her language and what she's trying to keep. And in particular, while her sister's getting married, everyone kind of is hoping that she will get a partner, but she's really focused on her tea shop. They hire a fortune teller for her sister who's getting married. But in doing so, she tells her in five blind dates, that fifth one's going to be your love. So all of her family starts getting dates for her, and it goes on this crazy adventure of like, who did her mom get her? Does it turn out that the guy that her mom got her doesn't really like the daughter? He likes the mom. The dad's picking somebody. The friend's picking somebody. You know, there's some cute elements in there where she's got like the gay best friend who knows she needs to get to five, so he's willing to be the fourth. They show you that already in the trailer. So this is just one of those, again, Prime's version of what their Valentine's Day movie was going to be that I thought was pretty cute, especially with her running her shop. I don't think it's even better than Players, but if you needed an alternative pick, here you go with Five Blind Dates over on Prime.
All right. So
those are your two Valentine's Day picks if you were at home. But like we said, if you love the person you're with, take them out to see a really good movie. And that would be this one over here in The Taste of Things. So those would be the movies that we have for this week that we would highly recommend. Wrapping it up with one more, which I was not expecting. I'm going to wrap it with a good pick, which is my final pick of the movies that I wanted to cover, which is Welcome Home, Franklin. And I was hoping that part of this would be that this was the last movie Zach saw and I wouldn't have to talk about the other one. But Zach did me dirty and he skipped Franklin for this. I don't even want to know what this other thing would be. Now, Franklin isn't even a movie. This thing is 40 minutes long. It's almost too long to be a short, too short to be a movie. But I'm recommending it because it is Apple TV's rendition of the story of Franklin, the Snoopy character, who you said you really like. I think you're a bigger Snoopy fan than I am. I kind of just know the iconography of them. I love the animation here. Zach, I highly recommend you checking this out because it's about how Franklin got there. Turns out Franklin's always been on the move. And his biggest thing and why it's titled Welcome Home, Franklin is that he's just trying to find a place to fit in. And in Snoopy World, you got like the biggest cast of characters that are completely opposite to all of the places that he's visited. But I think it was a really good take on the world. I like the Snoopy World. It's very vibrant. It's very comfortable. And the shadow work that they do here for the animation, and I'm even the sound design for 40 minutes of a Snoopy product, very, very good. Zach said, I'm not going to catch this one. I'm going to catch This Is Me Now, a love story. It took me day by day to figure out what this was, how convoluted this visual project that needed to be released as a movie on Prime. It had a Dunkin' Donuts thing, but hold on, there's going to be an adjacent soundtrack to it. This visual elemental experience, it's Lemonade.
Yeah.
You're just releasing all the music videos at the same time.
With like a little bit of narrative thrown in there. Just a peppering of narrative thrown in there.
It's a wheel. You're just selling me the wheel again. You're not reinventing a single thing. No. And damn, is that the most annoying part of this thing. Just have it be an album.
Mm-hmm.
So starting off with the album, you heard the lowest debut, not just for Jennifer Lopez, but for a top 40 pop star.
Yikes. I did not hear that. I mean,
so she's using the excuse that it's supposed to be a movie.
Right. She was saying this is going to be like her last album for a little bit, wasn't she?
So, look, Jennifer Lopez had an album in the past called This Is Me Now. I don't know if you heard about that one. This Is Me. Oh, sorry. This Is Me Then.
Mm.
This is what it was. I don't know if you remember it. I know you have the whole collection behind you somewhere, but it was
this CD collection's over there. So.
Yeah, it was this specific album cover. And I guess this is her flip on This Was Me Then. And now it's This Is Me Now.
I mean, this is her now.
That's it. I have nothing else to put to it. Okay, let's talk about this movie, Zach. You saw it with me. What is it? This is me confused.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a little bit like her attempt to do Cloud Atlas, but, like, it's also this weird, like, meta commentary on her career, and not really even her career so much as her, like, tabloid career, right?
Because it's all... Yeah,
it's all these people commenting on her love life, whether it is her friend group or her like zodiac signs for some reason,
played by Up in the Sky,
Post Malone and Kim Petras.
Keep going. It's some of the weirdest names. Don't forget the one who gets told to shut up. Where is he?
Neil deGrasse Tyson. For some reason.
Yeah, like I don't even know where he is on this cast.
Like it feels
no
like
sense.
It just feels like a list of the most famous people who've asked Jennifer Lopez for concert tickets or something. Like, I don't really understand why we've arrived at this collection of people.
Yeah, if I have, what's her name? Who'd she slap in Monster-in-Law? Jane Fonda. If I have Jane Fonda there, will people like me? Like, if they're talking about it, will it be okay? She wrote a script where her friends are telling her that she's doing all this messed up stuff, and she goes, yeah. Let me put that on the big screen. Like John Mulaney said, hey, this is a stand-up special about how I got into therapy because my friends told me I needed to, and I've grown from there. Imagine not growing and doing the stand-up special. This is certainly what I'm going to keep doing, I've been doing.
Exactly. Like, it's a little bit like, I guess there's like an element of vulnerability in her like airing her criticism like this, but it's not vulnerable at all because she's just like refuting it and making them look like they're petty or something because of it. Like it's so
like
it's
they didn't
so
understand
weird.
And she needs to teach them. Yeah.
It's so weird and narcissistic. And I get if you're like maybe a huge Jennifer Lopez fan and you're invested in her life and career, that's kind of like this might be a cool moment to like, you know, see her reflecting on it or whatever. But it just feels kind of like this weird delusional practice in like exercising your demons.
100%. You're trying to say some humbleness or what there could possibly be to get into a story. Ain't nobody wearing this heart dress to a wedding.
I don't know, maybe sprinkle those phrases.
I got his matching ones for South by, don't you worry.
Oh, great.
I am so confused with what she was doing here. There's steampunk energy. They don't really connect. Again, that Cloud Atlas thing is like the most confusing way to kind of make sense of it because she is like different versions of herself. And she's trying to explain when you're this big, you're practically a multiverse of yourself. It's on Prime. All she tried to do was a Lemonade type album. And that one was way better. Go check out that. I'm really confused by what this is, but like, hey, she's still fit. I guess that's her big thing to show you how she can still dance. She's still that Jenny from the block. She's 50
something.
Is that
the nicest thing you can say about it?
And you know, I'll say nice things if I could, Zach. Yeah. You know me. That is the nicest thing. It took me 3 days to get through this thing, and it's only an hour long.
I'll say, I think the rebound sequence was cool. The way she was shot was kind of cool, but most of it was not.
There's this one in this factory where I thought it was the Apple commercial where they threw the hammer to stop the apocalypse. Do you remember that 1984 commercial?
The green screen technology looks about that old too.
Yeah, someone said Spy Kids in the chat, 100%. No, this is something that is out there. This is me now, out on Prime.
I hope they put that on the poster. This is something that's out there.
This is something that's out there, yeah. But that is the movies of this week. It's time to break down the biggest part of the show, which is giving a big thank you to all of the Inner Cutie patrons who support us every week, or every month technically, here on the Intercut Podcast.
Yeah, thanks to those wonderful Intercut patrons who continue to support the show over at patreon.com/intercutpod.
This is love.
The Academy tier. Now. They are Tushar, Cademan, Connor, Josh, May, Ricky, Joe, Wiley, and Benji. And then the producer level patrons are, of course, Yuden Veer and Toon. A huge shout out to all of you. And a reminder to anybody listening or watching this episode that you too can become a member. Become part of the Inner Cutie Plus team over on patreon.com/intercutpod, where you can sign up for cool benefits and behind-the-scenes access, such as a look at our episode outlines before we record, a look ahead to what we do on the show, private channels on the Intercut Discord where you can chat with us throughout the week, and an invitation to our monthly Google Hangout, the next one of which is happening next week before we get in, lost in the South by Southwest sauce. So head over to patreon.com/intercutpod where you can sign up to be a member or join for free and find out things about the podcast before we talk about them.
Before we even know it.
Yeah, we post about our upcoming plans, what we're recording that week. We post about when certain brackets are going to go live and stuff like that. So if you just want to be in the know on Intercut, the best place to do that is patreon.com/intercutpod.
Beautiful. Now we get to the coming attractions, everything that's coming out in theaters, on demand, virtual, all of that good stuff. It's a pretty big week. I want to say this is the start of 2023 or 2024.
We're out February malaise.
And even then, we had some pretty big movies. Maybe not the best. They tried to be original. They tried to be something. So now I'm ready for the year to really start. The first one that we got is the second Coen brother making their debut. We were able to see the very serious one in Tragedy of Macbeth. Are you over under on Ethan Coen being the one to deliver the better solo project?
I want to say that I'm positive. I am like over
on it. I think I'm on your side too.
I like Joel and I like the Tragedy of Macbeth, but I really love the looseness of some of those Coen brothers movies
it's him, right?
Yeah. And it kind of seems like it's really the two sides, the left brain and right brain of their movies, that Joel goes off and makes the self-serious black and white Shakespearean movie.
No Country for Old Men. Yeah.
And then Ethan goes off and makes the road trip lesbian comedy that looks like a wild good time.
Together they make a serious man. Fargo. Yeah. I'm gonna miss that.
That's them at their peak powers. And if some rumors are to be believed, they might be going back to make a horror movie together. I would love to see that. But in the meantime, I feel like I'm just gonna have a really good time with Drive Away Dolls.
I think the cast looks fantastic. Margaret Qualley has been on the up and up, has not delivered a bad performance. Geraldine has been on the up and up. I think she's the funniest one in this cast, easily. And then just everyone else who wraps it up, it's massive. I don't even want to get into spoilers. I keep getting spoiled about a character who likes to appear in Nolan movies. And I feel like I have yet to see a picture of him.
He's in the trailer.
Okay, then I must sleep, I guess. I don't know. I'm excited for it either way.
He does great cameos in Coen Brothers movies as well. So, true. Smaller performances,
And Coen Brothers written movies, I guess, too.
Yes, there we go.
Directed by a friend that he should probably not have directing him. But that is Drive Away Dolls, the first one, and probably the biggest pick that we will be having for this week. The next one is Ordinary Angels. I don't hear them doing a campaign for this one, but I'm under the impression this is still one of those Christian movies that's a little bit more mainstream, not so much like your Lakewood or your, you know, like the Fireproofs that are out there, but one of those that stars Hilary Swank. It stars one of the bigger actors right now, in my opinion, who's been doing movies. He's Reacher. And it's got that like faith-based element to it that I think is based on a true story. So I see this getting a pretty big spot in the top five for next week. Io Capitano, as we mentioned, is getting a little bit of a bigger rollout. We have links for it, so we'll be giving our coverage next week. This is Italian's pick. Italy's pick, but technically it's not an Italian. It is, if I pull it up over here, the primary language is Wolof. So I'm very fascinated with this because I think it's supposed to be like an immigrant story, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Immigrants from Senegal, I believe. And so I'm assuming that's the native language in Senegal. So yeah, I'm curious to check this one out since we've
been waiting for this one, dude. Yeah. So I'm glad we got a link for it. We'll bring you coverage next week to let you know. And then some other big ones over on streaming. Netflix got a very interesting pair in Code 8 Part 2. I liked Code 8 Part 1. I thought it was fun for what it was, and it's cool to see that they got a lot of push from Netflix because it was an original movie. Netflix helped push it, and then Code 8 Part 2 is now a Netflix original movie, so I like that. But they should be cutting the funding for Mia Culpa. I don't know what is going on here. I have yet to even see a trailer for this. It is the new Tyler Perry, and we are making an event in this household. I have heard that off the trailer alone, a still, he has surpassed the worst wig, and we like laughing at his wigs. here in the Zarita household. So I am very excited for Mea Culpa. It is bound to be the funniest movie of this past week. But if you wanted something more serious, Netflix is building up their live stream game and releasing, or I should say, showcasing the 30th Annual Screen Actors Guild Awards. Those are the SAG Awards. This is pretty big, Zach. I think you can break down a little bit more into what this kind of means for the Oscars and how people use that as like a really big key to who's going to win. But many times these awards don't get streamed. I think all of these should be available on YouTube, but I appreciate that Netflix will at least be hosting it and then keeping it there so that people can tune in, because they tend to give some of the best speeches because these are the actors awarding the actors.
Yeah, it's a smart play on Netflix's behalf, making this the award show that they use to get into the whole award show game. Obviously, they don't stream the Oscars. They don't stream the Golden Globes. But now they have the Screen Actors Guild Awards, and it's the one where everybody who wins an award is probably going to be a celebrity, right? Because these are actors. Yep. It's not writers we haven't heard of or costume designers that nobody knows their name. Yeah. So they're going to get a lot of speeches from actors and a lot of people talking about acting. You know, the Screen Actors Guild has done this thing at some previous award shows
where they do
the montage of people talking about why they wanted to become an actor, which is something that usually goes viral. And it's also just an interesting opportunity to see what an award show will look like on a platform where commercial breaks aren't really a big part of why they do what they do, although that is something that is coming to Netflix. And you know, they won't have to necessarily play people off stage before the speeches are done or worrying about keeping the show under 3 hours as the Oscars are always worried about. So,
but if Netflix brings in the ads, is this a clever way to introduce them in the live shows? And thus you're getting used to opening up the app and seeing them? Damn.
Maybe. And I wonder what they're going to do in situations where, you know, there are people who are paying for an ad list here. Are they going to be subjected to the ads as well on a live event? Yeah.
Well, yeah, I play for Peacock in that way. But when I watch the Super Bowl, guess what I'm sitting with at any sports event? You had mentioned the cool thing they do for the SAGs. I had just learned the director's one. That's a really cool way to do it. I learned that their process is they get every nominee to damn near give a speech. And they pretty much thank everybody.
Yeah.
I don't know where they stream that one. Again, like I'm saying, a lot of these just get lost unless you have a critic in there or someone filming it. But that's a really cool approach. And what the SAGs do will be really interesting to watch. Did they have the meme? Where they had the cringy moment with Hassan? Was that the SAG?
Oh, I thought that was the Indy Spirits, I think.
Oh, okay. When's Indy? Is it the week
before? Those are usually the day before the Oscars.
Day before. Okay.
Yeah.
So we're on the road to it. A lot of big ones on the horizon. It's cool to see Netflix pick it up. While Netflix also has Avatar The Last Airbender. Over under, Zach. I'm going to keep it simple.
The over under, am I going to watch 2.5 episodes?
I was just going to say if it's good, but yeah. What's the percentage that you think you'll get done?
Way under. Way under.
Oh, no.
I don't know. Like,
no.
I mean, look, I haven't seen the original series, which I've heard is amazing. And it's actually been on my list for a long time.
I own it. It's wrapped.
Yeah, I'm going to watch that one before I touch this one, I feel like, right?
Damn. Look, I thought that last one that they did was One Piece last year.
Yeah.
They survived off that.
Yeah.
So maybe.
And people like that one.
Maybe. Yeah. But I have no faith for this one. Instead, I'm going to recommend that if you are a big Netflix subscriber, or maybe, you know, you tried to log in and they wouldn't let you in anymore. It's okay. Their Oscar-nominated movie, Nimona, is completely out on YouTube. And that was the coolest news, excuse me, I heard from Netflix all week. That's what I'm talking about. Release it for the public, full 4K. Enjoy it, because that is one of my surprise picks. If one were to win and upset some of the front runners for the animated category, I would highly put my money on Nimona. So I thought that was really cool that they released it. And that, to me, would be my pick of the week coming out of Netflix. But to get my real picks of the week, I'm going to begin with a double feature. This week in theaters, I finally have the chance
to go
see Tenet. Bro, like it sneaks up on me sometimes and then I remember, no, I do a movie podcast where the biggest freaking thing is to go see movies for a living in the best possible way. And when this movie released, my IMAX theater still existed. Rest in peace, Navy Pier. Since 2020, I haven't had the chance to see this movie in theaters, much less IMAX. My 4K is beautiful. but I'm traveling for this double feature Sunday that's on the horizon. They are re-releasing Tenet in 70mm full IMAX. For those who don't know, movies get released like this widescreen. There's those IMAX theaters, but then there's 8 theaters in all of the United States that will play it in a ratio that they can't even release at home. I'm hyping this up because I am so excited for this. I'm doing a double feature with Tenet. And then they're playing Doom Part 2 early. Zach said he's got his tickets. I told y'all last week, if you didn't know, now you know even more. 25th is going to have early screenings in 70mm IMAX. And I think even in general, there might be some Dolby regular IMAX screenings. You get to see it a whole week early. See it a whole week early. We're going to have a review ready for next week. I got the chance to see it and I'm still embargoed. But Zach?
It hits.
It's here, baby.
You lost in the sand?
I don't know what he... Dude, the score played in one scene. I thought I heard a sound that I've never heard before. I thought I was seeing colors I had never seen. Your boy, Austin? Yes, sir.
I'm really pumped for it. I'm really pumped for it. The buzz on it is pretty much universally that this one is better than the last one. So I
don't know if it's a spoiler for me to say, but I'm enjoying both, and a double feature would be too long, but damn, would it be crazy.
Yeah.
I already got my tickets that first night when we land, bro, so you better get them for Austin. We're going to talk about this afterwards, but I already plan on watching this movie 3 different ways.
We do in the 7th?
Is that what we got
to talk about it. Let's go. We got to talk about it.
I'm ready. I'm in Dune mode fully. The theater wasn't open when we went to our screening today. If not, I would have bought the Dune popcorn bucket. I would have been here with him, bro. But they were completely closed.
Okay.
They saw me coming. They would have opened, but they saw I was going to be the sicko. And they're like, yeah, absolutely not. We're not selling this. I am fully in. This is my first pick, the double feature. If you can, go see both of these movies in IMAX. They're going to be fantastic. Dune Part 2 and Tenet. Two IMAX double features is going to be everything that I want, and it's like right here. I've been waiting for this so long, so that is my biggest pick for the week. In second place, I'm gonna shout out the New England Patriots series. I don't know if you heard about this, but they were releasing something on Apple TV Plus that dealt with the dynasty that was Tom Brady and the New England Patriots, and they're releasing it weekly. Apple TV Plus saw Michael Jordan and what he was doing over there, and they took it personally. Yep. They're trying to do their last dance here, and so far it's not 10 out of 10. But it's pretty good, Zach. I'm curious your thoughts on it, if you've caught any episodes. But they got two out. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I haven't caught it yet. Our buddy Mirjani keyed me onto it and says it's really good. So I'm definitely going to try and catch up with that one.
For sure. So I'm putting it as my second pick of the week. And then this other one is just so obvious. It was a taste of things that we had brought up earlier because, damn, 2 months into the new year and I'm still finding favorites from last year, Zach. What you got?
Taste of Things. It's incredible.
It's one of the best.
More and more, I regret not even having it in my top 10 of last year because it is one of the really, really special movies. You know what? Maybe I'll put it in my top 10 of this year since it's only really coming out in 2024.
We're talking about Perfect Days and Taste of Things.
Right?
I think I got Taste higher for sure. For sure.
There we go. Yeah. I do too. For sure. It's really incredible.
All right, what else you got?
All right, so I will second your recommendation of Taste of Things just before move off of it. But the movie I'm most excited to see this weekend is probably going to be Drive Away Dolls. I've been doing some Coens rewatching because we are working on our Coens bracket, and they have just this really particular goofy sense of humor and way with dialogue that just really, really clicks with me. And I'm just anticipating to be transported back to that, to some of my favorite films, to the tone that really, really jives with me and gets me giggling. I'm going to really enjoy Drive Away Dolls. I can tell already. So I'm very hyped on that one. Part of the reason I'm hyped are my next two selections, because we are going to be filming a video on No Country for Old Men and Fargo, the two Coen Brothers Best Picture nominees. And man, if those aren't like stone cold 5-star classics, I'm not sure what is. These are just immaculately put together movies.
They are the best.
What was that? Yeah.
I said a serious man is.
I mean, look, they can have more than two five-star classics.
You look at that and you go like, oh, it's this one, it's this one, it's this one. And you find yourself naming four Coen movies before The Big Lebowski.
It's
and you
so
go,
hard.
Wait, what?
It's so hard
to
pick a
best Coen.
We did
the bracket with the Inner Cuties and it was
crazy.
Yeah.
It's so hard to pick the best one. And even the ones that aren't the best ones are so lovable for many ways. I just love their filmography, but to me, No Country for Old Men and Fargo are two of the ones that really are like undeniably A-tier, S-tier, whatever you want to say. They are the top tier of what the Coens are capable of. So No Country for Old Men is streaming on Paramount Plus. Fargo is streaming on Max. So if you've got either of those services, you can watch one of the great Coen brothers movies.
And they stream more, which I'm proud of. Sometimes they're trash.
And if you are on Netflix, I got a recommendation because I didn't realize there is
a brand new season of
Sunderland Till I Die. All you Wrexham fans out there, welcome to Wrexham fans out there. You got to put some respect on the OG. I think that that documentary show with Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney would not exist if it wasn't for Sunderland Till I Die, the original of these these soccer docuseries documenting the struggle of the lower divisions in English soccer and the beauty of these towns that revolve around these clubs that sometimes go up and sometimes go down in the tiered system of English soccer. It's just really interesting because unlike a lot of the shows we see, like The Backup Plan with the Patriots or The Last Dance with the Chicago Bulls, or even some of the soccer shows that are out right now that follow teams like Juventus or Real Madrid, this is looking at the lower divisions and the sort of like semi-professional nature of a lot of them, the scrappiness around a lot of them, and the way that they just have this like deep roots within the community. Sunderland is a club that has had a kind of like tumultuous past couple of seasons where they've gone up some levels and then gone down seven levels. They've struggled for financial solvency. They've changed hands of ownership a couple of times. So it's a club that's sort of like constantly on the brink, but they put together these really like heartfelt documentaries about like the desire and the passion that goes into running these teams and being part of these teams or supporting these teams. I don't know, man. Whenever I see the success of Welcome to Wrexham, I feel like they're just eating the leftovers that Sunderland Till I Die left them. And they haven't put out a new season since I think it was 2020, maybe. Yeah, it was in 2020. So I thought this show was long gone, but three new episodes just popped up on Netflix. So I'm eager to get into them.
Sick. I had seen that. I saw it was like a soccer show. So I was like, it seems people really like it.
Yeah.
It's got really good reviews. So shout out them. You like that whole soccer system that they could just kick out a team?
I mean, I don't want them to bring it to the U.S. as much as many people do.
Because I hear it, I'm like, that sounds fascinating. But as a Cubs fan, I cannot imagine the friendly kind finds empty.
There's a lot of pluses to it and a lot of minuses to it. And in the current spectrum of sports business, it's really perilous for a lot of clubs.
Sports business and politics and who's getting funded in what way seems like a mess.
But like when you look at the history of these leagues, there's so much like there's such a romantic quality to promotion and relegation. So it's exciting. It's definitely exciting.
All right. Well, there you go. This one is out on Netflix. As Zach said, finish your Wrexham first and then come in here and catch these. To run it back, I am highly recommending A Day at the IMAX Theaters, especially on this Sunday, the Day of Our Lord, where we're going to have Tenet reissued in IMAX. You should be watching that at full glory. Dune Part 2, I think you can watch whenever, but I promise you that it will just hit different in true IMAX. You can seek that out on the IMAX website as well. And then my other two picks would be to stay at home and watch the real football. In the back of the Dynasty, I should say, that's playing over on Apple TV Plus. Or go out to the theater with your loved one and watch one of the best movies of the year, this year, last year, whatever you want to call it. It'll be the best movie you see that day, I promise you, the taste of things.
Definitely. My picks for this week are Drive Away Dolls, the new Ethan Coen solo road trip comedy with an excellent cast. If you don't want to watch one Coen brother, you can watch multiple Coen brothers make movies with No Country for Old Men streaming on Paramount Plus or Fargo streaming on Max. But if you're looking for a really winning soccer docuseries It's not Welcome to Wrexham. It's Sunderland Till I Die, with three new episodes up on Netflix.
If you say, man. Is all for this week's show, but we had one final question. Zach.
Yeah.
Why are they making four Beatles movies?
Yeah. Is it Peter Jackson got announced as doing a
different
movie?
He needs to let these guys... Hey, he needs to let it be.
Nice. Yeah, man.
He just did The Doc.
Yeah, he seems like to be dedicating this section of his career to like reanimating the corpse of that band, even though two of the members are still around and kicking.
Still kind of doing it to them too.
So yeah, four different movies, each one from a different the perspective of a different member of the Beatles, starting in 2027. Yeah, he's going to be making all of them. I don't know, man. I think when I was younger, the idea that like any movie can be interconnected and like, oh, you know, maybe somebody would be like a minor character in this other movie, like I thought it sounded really cool and it really appealed to me. And the more movies I watched, I just want you to make one good movie, man. Can you make one good movie and then we'll worry about
character? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm intrigued. It reminds me of that Eleanor Rigby thing we've been talking about a bit. Now and then, that dude's got a movie at South By. That's an interesting take on it.
Yeah.
That was not successful, but it was an experiment.
It also got chopped up expensive. Thanks to Harvey Weinstein, but like...
another thing to bring up. But I'm going to say, how is this man making four movies in theaters?
Apparently.
And on the horizon, we have Horizon.
The is two-parter. He doing that?
No, we have the two-parter from, what's his name?
Oh, yeah.
So we are just dealing, like you're saying, you're already tired of it, and now we're finally getting this new realm of, like, all these Marvel movies suck. Okay, now should we just do what we complained about the Marvel movies in a Western that's split into two parts? Technically, the horror thing, if it wasn't for COVID, Netflix would have released the Fear Streets.
Right.
Now we have four Beatle movies, which is going to be the one to absolutely tank. How many multiverse movies before we got multiversed out?
Well, I mean, who is going to see the Ringo movie, right? Like, that's...
I like the meme, bro. The Ringo movie theater tickets were out the door. That is weird. I will say that. It reminds me of the Stranger Things kids. Now that they've all split up, we have all clearly seen who made it.
Right.
And we're all supposed to be nice about it and be like, some of y'all tanked, bro. Some of y'all tanked. And now you're going to do that to the Beatles? That's so mean.
Yeah. I don't... It's just very strange. It just feels kind of wrong. And I don't know.
Music? Clearances? I have too many questions.
Well, that's the one thing that I saw that intrigued me. Somebody speculated that this is like a way of making it easier to figure out how to divide the royalties and licenses between estates. But I don't know if that's really the primary concern here.
I want there to be a twist in the Ringo one.
Exploiting Beatles IP for all that you can wring out of it.
Well... we'll see. Interesting question to have at the end because I'd seen that pop out today. I'm intrigued. I'm not going to say I'm for it, but I am intrigued for what it was. His last documentary for the Beatles was pretty good. So
yeah,
I can't deny that. So we'll see that.
And Peter Jackson isn't some hack filmmaker, right?
Like, okay, but what's his last narrative?
I mean, I didn't like the Hobbit movies either, but or was there something between?
No, it's the Hobbit movie because he did two documentaries. He did the one you were talking about, bringing people back from the dead. He did that for the World War II one.
Yeah, you're right.
Which was interesting. That was fascinating. What he was doing, that was crazy.
But that's the thing. He is a good filmmaker. Not every movie is great, obviously. But like, I'd like to think that he's got some interesting reason to want to do this beyond just like, the Beatles were cool, weren't they?
He really didn't like how Yesterday did, so he's there to fix it. But no new original projects from him until the 2030s, so at least there is that. But that is officially everything for this week's show. I am Arturo. You can find me over at LME Movies on Twitter, on Letterboxd, on YouTube.com. Zach, where can people find more from you?
You can find more from me at Zshevich across social media, or you can find my videos over at Multiplex Show on YouTube, TikTok, or Instagram.
A reminder that you can listen to every episode of the Intercut Podcast on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, or whatever your favorite podcatcher is. You can catch the live video here on YouTube.com every week, where we talk about all of our favorite movies that have come out on the weekend must watch. A big shout out to all the Intercuties who listen live, all of the patrons, all of the iTunes listeners giving us that 5-star review. We appreciate everybody who's been subscribed to the Clips channel over there, where we put some of the smaller things that we don't fully talk about, just in spurts, and then our bigger reviews that have been here. Those of you who've been listening to the live stream, we have videos on the Coen brothers coming out. We got a bracket we just did with the Intricuties over on Patreon. We've got some South by coverage on the horizon. We've got so much good stuff in the works before we even wrap up the stuff for the Oscars, which is really just 3 weeks away. I was looking at that day. It's a pretty packed day, just so you know, at South by. But we got something at 7, so we're going to have to make it work in some way.
Yeah.
But before we get to all that good stuff, again, a big shout out to all of you for listening. Thank you for joining us on this podcast today. Don't forget to leave us a comment, drop a like, follow the socials over at Intercut Pod. And until next time, keep watching movies. Don't get stuck in that bucket.